AT&T. Listening.
For something, KU2BNG, how you doing?
Ray 4, H&T, Hotel November Tango. Whiskey Alpha 4, Hotel November Tango. Name's Alton, Alpha Lima, Tango Oscar November.
This is Glenn, Kilo Delta 2, Bravo November Golf. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. We just watched a Dolly Parton thing on television, came out to the ham shack, trying to warm it up enough to be able to be comfortable.
It's cold recently, especially in the mornings for me. I don't do well in the mornings when it's cold. I guess it'll warm up again maybe around me.
I'm looking forward to springtime. Yeah, I really am. We haven't even hit winter yet. That's what, on like the 22nd of December. And I'm really looking forward to springtime.
Fortunately, is that autumn and spring don't really seem to exist. It goes like from summer to winter. You know, that could be global climate change. Autumn and spring are getting squeezed out.
I think we did have a COVID virus. I'm not one of those people who disbelieves. I actually believe that there is, climate change coming. That bothers me. I really do dread that. And let's see, what else? There are a bunch of things I dread. I have a list.
Here's the bad thing. I think we're already above the 2 degrees Celsius that we're not supposed to be above until the end of the century. Well, what was the UN goal toward holding global warming under control? It can't go up more than 3 degrees Celsius before the end of the century. We may already be beyond that.
We're well beyond it. And that bothers me a great deal, too, because I think we're jeopardizing our world. And so I'd like to see us kind of dial it back a notch and maybe see if we can't. You know, it used to snow here. But when I was a kid, I'm in upstate South Carolina in Pendleton, and we would have snow. And that was a wonderful thing. I loved having the snow. Plus, I drive golf carts a great deal, and there ain't nothing more fun than a golf cart in the snow.
There hasn't been snow this year. I don't think there was snow last year, or the year before, or maybe the year before that. And usually if there is, it's a dusting of less than an inch, which is gone by, like, mid-afternoon. There was one winter not that long ago we had snow as early as late October. But, yeah, you're right. I don't know, you know, I've only lived in this area for, let's say, about the past 10 years. But even in the New York City area where I was before, I didn't see that much really bad snow. So, you know, what that means, I don't know. Is it evidence of climate change? Maybe.
My wife, KB, I call her KB, Kim, K-I-M. She and I, we had different contracts throughout the country. And we had a home in Norman, Oklahoma. Excuse me, I'm trying to cough. We had a home in Norman, Oklahoma, because she ran one of the TV stations out there. And we were busy, busy, busy. But one night, I was loading trailers, trying to drag them back to the farm here in South Carolina. And bless her heart, we threw water in the air, and it froze before it got out of the cup. Just amazing about it. But, I mean, it just froze in the air.
Up north, I don't understand. I wasn't in the really, really cold part of New York. You know, the New York City and Long Island area, the temperature is kind of buffered by the fact you're surrounded by ocean water, which holds on to a lot of heat. Upstate New York, yeah, I imagine that would happen. Throw a glass of water in the air and it disappears into a mist. You know, it freezes and comes down as ice. So, yeah, I think I've seen it that cold, but not recently.
Me last night about Connecticut. Well, I've not been to Connecticut, and probably not going to be, but I saw it from Montauk, and you know that's a skinny road going up to Montauk?
Off the end of Long Island? Yeah, that's like, is that the end of Sunrise Highway, or is there another road? It's not much of a road by the time it gets to the end of Montauk. I don't think I've ever, probably never gone that far east. I don't know, Suffolk County, maybe as far as, like, Islip. I don't think I've ever gone to the very end.
Business several times, and they would say, well, go through New York City and take the left lane on the right side of the road or whatever, and come on up to Montauk. That was the most monotonous thing I've ever done in my life. And when I got up there, we were walking around twice. And on one occasion, Paul Simon was in a park, and there were just a few people standing around playing music. I went, are you serious? So I don't go to concerts and such, and so, but to see him in a park in Montauk, and there were several other artists up there that did the same thing. And so I guess these people really thought Montauk was hot.
It ain't New York City. I mean, let's see, as you go out that way, you come toward, you know, some of the more expensive parts of Long Island. But, you know, yeah, it's a ride. It's from the New York City area, it's at least a two-hour ride, maybe longer. You got to remember, Long Island is over 100 miles long. That's why they call it Long Island.
Okay, yeah, you're right. And I guess that is the definition of Long Island, because it took forever to get out there. Each time, I drove it twice, and yeah, it took forever to get out there and took forever to get back. But the road was like two lanes, opposing and coming, and I mean, sand on each side, no sidewalks, nothing like that. And so whenever, you know, we hear people talk on television about Long Island, that's what kind of comes to mind to me. I had a good time doing it. It was a once and twice in a lifetime thing to do, but I won't be back up that way anymore. What dragged you down here?
Sure about that. I probably just should have stayed where I was. I just thought maybe it was a less crowded, lower cost lifestyle, but I don't know if it was worth that or not. I'd have been better off staying where I was in I was in Nassau County in the South Shore, like not far from JFK. In what they call the Five Towns. But, you know, it was kind of hectic. It's not like New York City. But, yeah, it's a bit crowded. So I figured, you know, less crowding, slower pace of life, cheaper lifestyle. But, yeah, quite frankly, if I could go back, I would.
You know, I was born and I'm at my mother's house. So I locked it up when she passed, and I shouldn't have never done that, but I did. I locked it up when she passed away, and I didn't come back to it for years. So now I'm down here trying to clean it up, primarily because I sold the farm, and my wife got tired of camping.
Down here, I mean, Yeah, I mean, you should clean it up, and if nothing else, try to sell it on the market. But, you know, any property anywhere that was willed to me, I would definitely try to hang on to. It's up to you.
2 acres in Arizona, if anybody's interested. You know, they didn't say anything to me about water. I knew it seemed to be too cheap. It was like $140 an acre. And I thought, well, I can do that right out of my checkbook. And I did. And so but I've got that land out there. And there ain't no water under it.
And then, I forget what county. Yeah, also in Arizona. Where was that in Arizona? But yeah, there's I had 10 acres of land that I bought pretty much sight unseen. And yeah, as far as I know, there's no water under there either. So you'd have to make arrangements to get water somehow. Can you drill down or drill a well for water? You know, maybe not. I don't know.
In Florida, that Kim and I have been trying to develop a little bit. We cleared half of it, and we put a well in, and so there's that. And I wanted it so I could go loaf. When it got cold here, I'd go there and loaf. I mean, their minimum temperature is like nothing below 42. And I can live with 42. My wife will freeze to death at 42, but I can deal with it no problem at all. I mean, to me, this evening is not cold. She would freeze to death.
Really, right now, I just have a problem in the mornings. You know, when you get old, your blood doesn't circulate. You've got that reptilian metabolism. So it takes me forever to warm up. And yeah, you know, you get old, your muscles and joint hurts. So the colder weather this time isn't usually always the best for me. But, you know, I guess that's the aging process.
How old?
I just turned 60 not long ago.
And you're not old at all. That's so funny because I just turned, 71. They say. And, but we did do that, and I turned 71 the other day, and it was kind of the day after Thanksgiving. And in fact, one piece of property we have, I had never seen, and so we went last year. I wanted to see it one time, and so we went down there and we looked at it, and I turned 70 on that day. And it was Thanksgiving Day. That was last year. And so I got to see my land for the first time on Thanksgiving Day, which is kind of funny because the next year I got to get back down there. I'm pumping money into it simply to make sure that, you know, I've cleared the land and this and that. And it's that Florida-type environment. And it looks like Florida. And it's, 30 miles east of Tampa? I mean, it's nothing special, but it's off the Gulf. It's a short drive from Jacksonville and Augustine and stuff like that. So it's kind of a cool place to have to go loaf as you get older to go play. And that's all I wanted it for. And plus, when I was a stupid person, I would do cave diving, and I had dove beneath it. So I knew how deep that well was going to be, about 40 feet. Turned out to be 45, and they came up with water. And it's the purest water you'd ever want to see.
Deep enough. I mean, I also have property. I'm not sure at the time what I wanted to do with it, and I really don't know now. In Eureka County, Nevada, just north of Carlin, Nevada, which is, you know, it's just open land, undeveloped land. But I guess the, well, let's see, the Humboldt River, it's just north of the Humboldt River, so maybe it does get some flood water at certain times of the year, you know, but that's the major concern there, is where do you get water? You might have to drill 100, 200 meters down, or more, to get it the good water. That's the other thing about it, is there's a copper mine just north of me. So that water is probably no good. So yeah, the major thing is, can you get water?
I mean, that's the thing you gotta have. On any property, that's what you have to have. And so, no, this property in Arizona, I am not, you said 200 meters? Really?
More. Because the shallower groundwater, you probably gotta go below the first water table and see if there's a deeper water table. Because less than a mile to the north, a mile or two to the north, is a copper mine. So you know what that's gonna do to the groundwater. If you look at it from the satellite picture, you see this emerald green water sitting in this holding pond. That's not good for the groundwater.
It would be. And me being from, you know, this part of the country, upstate Carolina, you know, we're used to generally having pretty good water and such. Then playing around down in Florida, pretty good. Then I stumbled over that land out there one day when I was flying around. I think I've been to Nevada one time. Just once in my entire career, I think I've been to Nevada. I'm thinking back, trying to remember. I don't think I've been to Nevada more than once.
Went to Vegas for a couple of days, that was it. The water table is going to be... Now, I recently had occasion to really dig into the details of that property. And the northwest corner of the property, there's an easement that was granted to the federal government for the purpose of putting in irrigation. So there may or may not be an irrigation pipeline I can tap into. You know, however you have to do that, I'm sure there's permits you gotta fill out. So there might somehow be water somewhere other than drilling 200 or 300 meters straight down, you know, to get to the good water table.
I are trying to develop a little bit more of that land down in Florida, only because, like I said, I want someplace to go loaf, just go be, just someplace to go play. When it gets cold up here, I want out. I want out badly. I mean, and cold means when it gets down to any temperature. Kim's not much on... She was born in Florida, but she was raised in Velasquenda. How do you say that word? And so she was born down there, raised down there. Her dad was in the oil industry. And then they came back to the United States and bought a house in El Paso that you could see the border from. I mean, you could just cup your hand over your eyes and look out there. That was the border. So, and I went with that crazy man many times to go get gas in Mexico.
That's what you're trying to say. I know they have oil production.
Well, I've noticed that some words kind of escape me. So, Venezuela, her Spanish was her first language, and she's just an American little old skinny white girl. I mean, just like me. And so, but we're both getting a little age on us, and we want to go do things. And her dad and mom lived out in El Paso. Her brother is a federal judge out in Texas, and which is a trip. I've never seen him work. I've never walked into that that courtroom to see him work. I kind of stay away from that stuff. And but he's out there. They are still out there. Now they, I think, are living in the hill country, what they call the hill country. And I've got to go to Colleen, however you say it. I've got to go put my coin down on a tomb. So I've got to go get that done, too.
So I had an embarrassment of riches. I mean, you know, they're an OPEC member. They had oil, major oil exports. And, you know, as is the case in a lot of those countries, though, the wealth generated by these things gets diverted somehow. But, yeah, I mean, I don't really know that much about Venezuela, so I couldn't tell you. But I do know they did have very, very substantial oil fields down there. It's actually in the middle of a lake, Lake Maracaibo, I think. Under the lake, there's where, you know, most of the oil is. But as is the case in a lot of these countries, you know, let's say the wealth gets squandered. Or somebody ends up stealing it and moving it to Switzerland.
I do. And you're absolutely correct. Her dad was in the seismologist area of the industry where they would drop, like, explosives into the ground and measure, you know, what came back up from it. I just thought it was all so interesting. He was a physicist, and I just thought that was really pretty super cool. The other thing is everybody in her family went to Texas A&M. They're all, if you're a guy, an Eagle Scout. If you're not an Eagle Scout, you're not in the family. And so I made sure mine did. And so, but no, I just find Venezuela kind of interesting, but scary now. Very scary now. I think if it's outside of the south side of Georgia, I'm not interested in going.
Latin American governments has been mismanaged. You know, I don't know much about it either. Let's see. Deborah lived in Texas. Texas? She lived in Ecuador when she was married to who she was married before. And, you know, Ecuador is kind of interesting because Ecuador is kind of trapped between Colombia and Peru, the two major narco states in the area. But they sort of managed to strike a balance between, you know, becoming a dictatorship or anarchy or whatever. They still managed to maintain some semblance of government or laws. You know, and it's a beautiful country. You know, it's hills and farms and, you know, whatever. She lived there on a farm for a while. So, you know, it's... There's nice places everywhere.
There are nice places everywhere. Mother and Daddy raised us on land. I mean, Mother and Daddy's house was in downtown Pendleton. But they raised us up with farms and such, so we had to go to work every morning, that sort of thing. And go count the cows and make sure they were all still there. So that was a lot of fun back then. You know, and I miss the land. I swear to goodness, I really do miss the land. I did not want, Daddy sold one of the farms before he did pass, and I sold the last one, the big one, 7-8 years ago, And I kind of regret it all. I really do. And then I told Kim, and we went camping for 6 months, and she petered out pretty quickly. But I thought I was doing good for her. I mean, I was having a good time. She may not have been, but I was having a really good time. And then she retired from Clemson, and from there on in, we just kind of had a good time. And that's what we do still today.
Ned Barron or a farmer or, I'm a city person. The idea of living on a farm might be probably at this point alien to me. Food comes out of a grocery store. Which is, I think that's a shame because everyone, wherever they live, should really know. We should all be acquainted with, farm life and how to get things directly from the earth and directly from nature. Half these people, if you put them out in the wild, they'd starve. They wouldn't know how to survive. So it's good in the sense that we should all know where food comes from. But yeah, for me, for most of my life, it's like, go to the grocery store. So I don't know if I have that connection, really.
I understand what you're saying. From my end of it, growing up, we would, my buddy that I met when I was a child, we would put a sulky behind a Shetland pony. And we go camping for the weekend. We tie everything to the sulky, and that included guns and everything. What were our parents thinking? I have no idea what my mother and daddy were thinking, because they let us walk out of the house with firearms. Not a kid I'm responsible with would I do that for.
You go back 50, 60 years or more, that wasn't such an unusual thing. Let's say you were a high school student. In the morning you go hunting before class. And when you come in from hunting, you stick your rifle or whatever in your school locker and then pick it up later. Especially if you grew up in the rural part of the country, and especially probably around here. And children, I think, then were more resilient than anyway at that time anyway. Parents would leave their kids alone for hours and hours at a time, knowing that they could take care of themselves. Our parents would say, we'd come home from school, our parents would say, okay, go play for the rest of the day and come back for dinner. They didn't worry much about what we got into. They knew we could take care of ourselves, or, at least try to.
Mother and Daddy just turned us loose. We were free-ranged. In fact, after my brother and sister got gone, they forgot they had a third child. They did. They actually forgot about me. And so I got to go to school in Atlanta during the summers and stuff like that. I had a great time. But they wouldn't let me take a car back and forth. I had to thumb. Can you imagine allowing your child to do that? I would thumb back in the middle of the night, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd be thumbing and 18-wheeler go by. I mean, good gracious, give me a break. I mean, what parent does that? But we had a great time doing it, and Mother and Daddy saw nothing wrong with it. They just thought there was nothing going to happen bad, and that's when I got to picking up ham tickets and FCC licenses and such was back then. And I'd get out of class at Tech on a sunny afternoon and go down to the market. What do you call it? I'm trying to think of the word. That market building where they had the bridge that went across from one building to the next, and we'd go down. I'd stand exams and ended up with a litany of dabbling licenses.
Have the, I don't know, the fear, the paranoia, whatever it is you had now. Yeah, you and I are probably one of the last of the free-range children. Yeah, okay, dinner's not quite ready yet. Go somewhere, go to your friends for an hour. Or go ride your bicycles, or go, you know, go play outside or something. I mean, we used to live to next to a vacant lot where some construction lot, which had a fence around it, but, you know, a child-sized person could fit under it. And I don't know what the hell was in that construction lot. You know, rusty nails, you know, bits of metal, bits of glass, bits of plastic. You know, we thought nothing of playing in there. No one, nothing was, I guess we had enough common sense not to get into anything. You know, you went to the playground, and there was no rubber mats under the jungle gym. It's like if you fell off the jungle gym, too bad. But I don't remember ever getting seriously hurt.
Anywhere unless we were bleeding. I mean, we didn't go to the doctor unless there was blood coming out. And I swear to God. And Mother and Daddy. Well, let's see. Johnny and I would go out to the farm east of Pendleton, and we'd take a sulky and a little Shetland pony. I'll never forget that. And we'd carry guns and everything else. And so we'd go out there and have the greatest weekend. I got scars all over my body from places that I was running through a field and hit some wound up barbed wire or some such. And so we would have a great time. We really did. But now, we would sleep. We got to where we would sleep on top of the barns. I don't know why, other than all the boys and girls came sparking, that's called necking, up under the barn, and I guess we were, but my brother one time, that sorry person, actually gave me a box of cherry bombs, and they were real. They were the real cherry bombs. And I accidentally let one get loose from me. I don't know why we'd ever light them in our hands, but one got away from me, and between the two sleeping bags on top of a barn. And so you never saw two little old boys rolling apart so quickly. And it blew a hole in the top of that barn like you would not believe.
Cherry bomb was like the spherical marble-sized or maybe golf ball-sized thing with the fuse. What did we have? Or M80s. You know, the cardboard tube with the fuse at the right angle to it, which was supposed to be like almost a quarter stick of dynamite. I'm surprised we didn't... The thing that was neat about those things, too, though, is they'd... You'd light them and throw them in the water and watch them blow up underwater. Yeah, you know, I suppose we didn't seriously hurt ourselves with any of these things. It's kind of amazing. Oh, remember lawn darts? How is this a toy that was ever allowed on the market if you ever played with lawn darts? This long, like a bar dart, but longer. And you had to throw it across the lawn into a hoop. And it had this big old spike on the end of it. Maybe 6 inches long. So, you know, even our toys then were dangerous. What else? The, you know, there was a bunch of them. The Easy Bake Oven, or I guess that was a girl's toy. You could burn yourself with that. I guess they'd never be allowed to make that now.
Do you ever eat any of that? Lead paint. Did you ever eat any of that?
We probably were exposed to it. it would probably be peeling off the walls. Actually, as long as you don't ingest it, or don't breathe it in, yeah, I'm sure we were exposed to it. Well, we were exposed to something much worse. We were exposed to tetraethyl lead in gasoline, and that's a lead pollutant that went everywhere. I mean, you would even find lead in the lungs of Antarctic penguins. That's how global pollutant tetraethyl lead was. Yeah, eventually it's probably best you got rid of them.
When I was a kid, I accidentally held first phone, second telegraphy, radar, and all that stuff. And one day I was working for WFBC because, you know, back then, back in 1970, $10 an hour was big money. And so I was working up on Caesar's Head trying to dodge the draft and everything else, but they got me. And so we were up there at Caesar's Head, and I saw three or four guys walk into the control room one day, and you know, they installed this repeater. That's when it went on the air back about 50-something years ago.
Peter, yeah, this has been here probably in almost the same place since, yeah, since the early 1970s. There's actually two repeaters that are W4NYK. There's one on the other mountain. Whichever mountain this one's not on. What's the other mountain? Paris Mountain? But that other repeater I never hear any activity on.
And it's up, what, 3,500 feet. Good repeater. Great repeater. There are a couple that are better, but not as well frequented as the 0161. 0161, man, back then we would buy a Regency dad blame radios, and you'd have to send off for crystals. And they would send you back crystals for 0161. And you'd plug them into the radio. I don't even know what happened to all my equipment back then. But yeah, I remember plugging the dad-blame crystals in just to be... I think I had maybe a technician. I got it like in 70. And I swear. And so, you know, you upgrade from there. And then you get to where there's nowhere else to go. And so, but you upgrade from there, 0161, back in the day when you'd have to plug your crystals in to the radio. Nothing like synthesize, nothing like that. And so, I mean, that was not heard of back then.
And Citizens Van radios. And, you know, there might have been like six channels or four channels, however many pairs of crystals you had. But, yeah, there's one more of these repeaters on Paris Mountain. That's the one that used to have the phone patch. And as far as I know, I don't hear any activity on it. But, you know, too bad. All these disused repeaters are out there. We should be using them.
Retired pilot, and so, I mean, you come off the ground, first thing you do is pick up a radio. It was illegal. You couldn't do it back then. And so you pick up a radio, and you call home and say, I'll be there in 45 minutes. And everybody kind of look around, but, you know, yeah, the plugging those crystals in back then was an easy thing. I mean, that's just what we did. And then they came up with the synthesized one. I'm EE2. And so I could not believe that I did not know how to do all this stuff. But, you know, it kind of came up as you got farther down the road. WA4HNT for ID.
With TK82BNG. Yeah, I should scour around some of these disused repeaters around here. 146820 is the other W4NYK repeater on the top of Paris Mountain, the one that had the phone patch. But as I said, it's like, you know, they're out there and nobody uses them. So one day I'm going to go. I got about a dozen other frequencies programmed in here. I'm just going to step through and see, you know, who's got activity and who doesn't. But that's typical of any place you go to. There might be 22 meter or 70 centimeter repeaters, and there's activity on like three or four of them.
Oh man, I'd go around, and all these other guys that, you know, I was a kid, and they were World War II guys, and they were from the, like, radio op, you know, ops and so, but I did not really know how to appreciate them as I should have. These were all World War II fellows who knew a lot more than I'll ever know. And so we, you know, I got into ham, 25 years after them. And I, you know, that's when I came on board. And it was only because my parents forgot they had a kid, and I was able to go to Atlanta and play and learn Morse code and stuff like that, and which is something I cannot believe people let their children do. I just cannot believe it. But we went down there, and anyway, we went, you know, we had a good time doing that, and these World War II guys were great. I mean, I think of them often. I think of these guys, and they were old, they were grown men when I was a kid, so you kind of look back at them and think and have some reverence for them.
Requirement by that time, I need to study Morse code. It's extraordinarily useful. I mean, it takes like no equipment to send and receive it. It's very, very low bandwidth. It's very, very efficient. They haven't required that in a while, though, have they? 10, 15 years or more. So you have a whole generation of hams that don't really know how to use it.
People don't understand what I just did. Those people came up short. I know the code. I have second-class radio telegraphy, and which no one has today. I mean, nobody has that license and commercial and second-class radio telegraphy. And the only way you can get to a first is to have served on board a USS registered passenger liner, and there hadn't been one of them in 30 years.
Probably haven't. Yeah, so maybe that's a deficit in the FCC requirements. Because until recently, there used to be a novice license, right? Where you only had Morse code on certain bands, you know, but you had to have Morse code. And now it's not required even for, the extra license. I don't think it's been a requirement for 15 to 20 years. Which, again, is too bad because it used to be, and it still is, very useful. At one time, probably, most of the overseas telegrams went by, you know, Morse code. You used to have maybe scores of CW stations, like companies like Western Union. You know, I could send you know, I can send and receive. Voice code can be reliably sent and received very, very, very fast with very, very, very little bandwidth. So it's still useful, but I guess it's not required.
I think they required me to do 20 words send and receive for my second class, radio telegraphy. And I got that when I was, I think, maybe 18. I don't believe I could do it again. The first phone, I think I got that when I was like 18. Second was when I was maybe 17. So these things came along naturally because, like I said, mother and daddy forgot they had a kid, and they let me wander off, and I went to Atlanta every summer. The school said I never missed a day of school, but they allowed me to show up early, go late. They gave me credit, so I didn't have any kind of a fault in going to school. And so I got perfect attendance all the way through until I, you know, got to be my senior year, and my mother wanted to kill me then.
It's a way you're kind of lucky, you know, that after the second or third child, your parents ignored the rest of them. You got to basically grow up to do what you wanted and not what they... Oh, we had a third kid? Oh, I didn't realize that. We have one, two... Oh, yeah, okay, there's one more. But, you know, maybe it sounds like neglect, but in a sense, maybe it freed you to be out from under their thumb, as it was, to do what was not expected of you. So I guess in a way it was good.
That is exactly the way my mother looked at it. And she and I were the best buddies. My dad and I were the best of friends. And here I am, like, when they passed away, I locked my house. I just locked it up and stayed on the farm. And on that farm, we had 770 feet frontage on Lake Hartwell. And I did not use the lake. Mother was scared of water, so she wouldn't let me do any. So Daddy let me build my house on the leeward side of the tallest point. And bless his heart, Mother wasn't going to hear of it. And so we built that house there. And then they said, you can't have a mortgage. What? And so I couldn't, how am I going to pay for this thing? Well, through the years, they helped me pay it off. And I sold the farm with, we got it paid. And so it was a great time, a wonderful time. And Mother and Daddy never really came up there after I went to the farm, and they never really came back up there too much, and we had a good time. And so, you know, then I unlocked this dad blame house down here and started trying to clean it out, because I got a litany of stuff to get rid of. Mothers, they were married 70-something years. I don't know how to get rid of all this stuff.
Put it all on Craigslist. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. You never know. Well, 9/10 of it is probably trash. But if it's an accumulation of that many years, you never know what you might have in there. I wouldn't know how to evaluate antiques. I couldn't tell you. One man's antique is another man's, you know, one man's treasure is another man's trash. But you never know what you might have. You might have to just sit there one day and go through everything. Who knows? You might rip out one of the walls or floorboards and find a bunch of gold coins or something.
Oh, mother and daddy own, they've been gone a long time. But they own one of the historic houses in Pimbleton, built in 1836. And they gave me a good bit of money so I could go play in that house. And it took me 3.5 years. But I was up there hammering on the walls one day, and silver began to fall out of the walls. Silver. Spoons, knives, forks, pure silver stuff. In the dead blame wall of the house where a vice president once walked.
Vice president. No, a lot of old houses, that's not that uncommon. Because, you know, the older generations like to have things they could hold in their hands. And in a lot of cases, they didn't trust banks or other financial institutions. So as I said, you look under a floorboard or something, you might find, you know, banknotes, gold and silver coins, stock certificates, bond certificates, you know, whatever else is down there. Because the older generation, that's, you know, they wanted things they could actually touch. They didn't trust their stockbroker or banker or whatever to hold on to the things for them.
Almost 10 years before having children. I can't believe they started with my brother. So they went almost 10 years before they had children. And that was beginning in the 30s, you know, way back when. And so mother and daddy were classic. They were great. And like I say, my dad, and I have my dad's watch. Mother gave it to me on my 60th birthday. Mother gave it to my dad's watch to me on my 60th. She had taken it out of the bank vault and given it to me. She had it cleaned and serviced and whatever. And she gave me my dad's watch, which is like one of the most prized things I own. I mean, it really is. And I'm ready to put it back in the bank vault because it stays in the safe here. I don't wear it because some fool would kill me for it.
Sentimental value, but, you know, try to find out what it's worth. You know, again, some of that can be worth a lot. You know, it might be an old Rolex or something that could be worth 10 grand. I don't know. Old watches people still go for. They still command all kinds of crazy prices, especially things like old pocket watches, because I don't think anyone's worn a pocket watch in at least 100 years. But for some reason, that's, you know, popular now among collectors. Old pocket watches, old wrist watches. Things like that. If you're not that sentimental about it, it was your dad's watch, so you don't want to get rid of it. But yeah, you're right. You might not want to wear it either.
Because of the reason I said, and I don't dress up anymore because I'm old, and I mean, I'm not wearing a suit, not another day will I wear a suit, and I do not want a suit. I don't want to be buried in the churchyard. I want to be put someplace else. And I mean, it goes on and on from there. But no, it's a Hamilton. And they say, Mother said to me, you might want to get it appraised and put a little insurance on it. That's what she said. So I did. And its insured value is right at $12K. And I don't, I take it out to take it to the place to have it serviced every year. But other than that, I don't wear it because I don't dress up. I don't put on suits anymore. And I don't wear ties anymore. And I kind of am embarrassed in saying that I don't, because I don't feel like I can go to church because I am really one of these guys, you get dressed to go to church, but now I'm not getting dressed for anything anymore. And so Kim and I we've got our little bit of age on us, and that's okay. That's fun. It really actually is. And man, I've got to tell you, I love going to Myrtle Beach Presbyterian Church at Christmas time. It's wonderful. They have a service like you would not believe. It's grand.